Okay, back in Genesis, and we're going into Genesis chapters 40 and 41 today. In chapter 40 and 41, Joseph interprets dreams. And I said our assignment for this week was to read this and compare the dreams of chapter 41 with the dreams of chapter 37. Actually, it's the dreams of 40 and 41, but the dreams of 40 lead into 41, so there's actually four dreams in these two chapters. And it's interesting to compare and contrast the two events back into chapter 37. So chapters 40 and 41 is one continuous flow. This narrative flows out of what happened in chapter 37. Anybody have anything else? If not, we'll move to the narrative and I'll summarize it. But as we go into the narrative of Genesis 40, 41, we find out that in fact the two men are put into the jail where Joseph is. And this is part of Potiphar's house. Potiphar's being the captain of the guard. This is very explicit in the text. Chapter 39, it starts off, Potiphar is the captain of the guard. Now it comes off in chapter 40, it doesn't give his name, but he's still the captain of the guard in his house. These are men who are very high up in the palace. The baker, the chief baker and the cupbearer are men of high status. They did something, or somebody's accused them of something that ends them up in jail. And so Potiphar says, well, what I want you to do, Joseph, I want you to serve these two, because these are two men are important. And he wants to make sure that they're taken care of, because he doesn't want them to be maybe taken before the king and not look too well. Potiphar makes sure that Joseph is in charge of these two prisoners. So the captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph. Now, I think this is absolutely fascinating, because why is Joseph here? And he's not guilty, but he didn't speak up. It says that Potiphar's angry. Now, if he was angry with Joseph being a slave that he bought, what would be probably the outcome if he believed his wife? It would be full retirement for Joseph. The fact that he put him in the jail, in his house, and now he's not a prisoner of the king, or the Pharaoh doesn't even know he's there. So what better place for him to be protected by Potiphar than in the jail? So then Potiphar makes him kind of the head of the jail. That's what it said in 39. He knows he's reliable because he had him in charge of his whole house. So why was Potiphar angry? Angry with his wife. And he has to do something. He has to save face for himself and for her. So he puts him in jail. So these two men come in and they say to him one night after they've been there, and the Hebrew says after they've been there many days. It says a long time, but it's literally many, many days. They had these dreams. They say to Joseph, we both had dreams, and we don't know what they mean. And so Joseph says, well, don't interpretations belong to God? Now, they may not know who God is, but Joseph doesn't care. He knows who God is, so he's just going to say, the interpretations belong to God, so you tell me the dreams. And he said, because the interpretations belong to God, and God speaks to me, I'm going to tell you what they mean. He's pretty confident. I don't think he's arrogant, but he's confident because he knows God. They have these dreams. The cupbearer says, I saw three vine branches, and a hand comes down and squeezes them into the cup, and I lift the cup up. Joseph says, well, to the cupbearer, he says, I'll tell you what your dream means. After 3 days, you're going to be restored. Your head will be restored. And so he says, remember when you're restored and you're back as a cupbearer before the king, would you please remember me? And of course he doesn't get remembered. But see, the baker, he hears the dream get interpreted and he's going, do me. Because he liked what he said about the cupbearer. Well, it doesn't go so well for the baker, because he says, you know, your head is going to be removed. This isn't as nice an interpretation as the first one. But, you know, there's no repercussion from either one. It's just that when the cupbearer ends up going back and is restored, and Joseph had said to him, please remember me, and he says, then he adds to that, be loyal to me. You know, I interpreted your dream properly. Show me some loyalty for what I've done for you. And then he says, remember me to Pharaoh. This is an expression that means he doesn't know me, so tell him who I am. It's not that don't remind him that I'm here. That's not what it means. Tell him I am here. Mention my name to him. Drop my name. I am innocent. Now, the baker got his head cut off. And Josephus says that when it says he was hanged, it doesn't mean he's hung by a rope. It means he's impaled on a stake without a head. And then the birds ate his body. And the Egyptians did this for a good reason. It's so he could not enter the afterlife. So this was for them not only a physical condemnation, but an eternal condemnation. That's according to the Egyptian religion. But the cupbearer, he ends up getting his job back, and it says very clearly the cupbearer did not remember Joseph. Now we take that to mean, well, he got back in his job and he just forgot. You know, it just slipped his mind. No, Moses in the narrative reinforces it, and he says he forgot him. Now, in the Hebrew Bible, the word remember isn't I've forgotten something, I recalled it. It remembers means I know what I must do and I'm going to act on your behalf. To remember is to act on behalf of someone else. God remembered Noah when he was in the ark. That's the first use of the word. God remembered Noah in the ark. He remembered him and acted on his behalf. To forget someone is to purposely say, I am not going to act on their behalf. This is not a lapse of memory. This is a conscious decision. Now, why does he make this conscious decision not to help? Well, he doesn't want to risk himself. Why should he risk himself for a prisoner who's not even an Egyptian? Why should he want to remind the king that he was in prison to begin with? I think there isn't any reward for him to bring this guy's name up and try to get him out of prison. So he just says, I'm going to put it out of my mind. I'm just going to forget it. I'm not going to bother with him. That's not the end of the narrative, obviously. Meanwhile, 2 years later, Pharaoh has two dreams, and they both mean the same thing. Now, this contrasts the two dreams in the jail. They meant different things because one guy got restored and one guy lost his head. But these dreams both mean the same thing. And the two dreams, they're not too hard to understand. Seven skinny cows come up out of the Nile and eat up seven fat cows. Now, what's funny in the dream is these skinny cows eat the fat cows and they don't gain any weight. They stay skinny. Seven thin ears grow up out of the Nile and they eat up seven full ears. And they don't get any fatter. They stay skinny and parched and thin. Pharaoh says, I had these dreams. I can't interpret them. They're scaring me. He's disturbed by them. It says he worried about them. So he says, call the magicians. Call the wise men. Get them in here. I want to find out what these dreams mean. They come in, he tells them the dreams. They don't know. They don't know what they mean. And the magicians are the priests who practice divination. They're called divine priests, priests of divination. And divination is trying to understand the future. The magic that they perform, and the priests are also magicians, the magic they perform is trying to control the future. So divination is trying to understand what's coming, and magic is trying to control it. The wise men, who are the wise men? The wise men are the advisors for national policy. These are the men who, based on what the understanding of the priests, of the understanding they have of the future and the promise of what they're going to be able to do through their magic arts, then the wise men say, okay, here's how we should react to this event, this event, this event. These guys are clueless. They don't know what to do. All of a sudden, the cupbearer goes, wait a minute. You know, I do have a memory of someone. If you look at verse 9, he says, you know, I don't want to make mention of my own offenses here. I don't want to remind you that you put me in jail a couple years back. I don't want to bring all that up again. He's also, I think, saying, you know, I'm going to tell you something that maybe I should have told you before, and it slipped my mind, that this guy interpreted my dream in jail, and he asked me to tell you, and I didn't. See, he's already thinking, how am I going to tell him now that I met this guy? 2 years has gone by. What if he talks to him and says, yeah, I told him to tell you 2 years ago? He doesn't understand the way Joseph thinks. Joseph's not going to bring an accusation against him, but he doesn't know that. So he's a little intimidated. So he's kind of approaching the king on thin ice here. And he tells the king about what happened. He says, this guy interpreted these two dreams. And exactly, interpreted them exactly right. One guy was elevated back and restored. The other guy lost his head. He says, maybe you should call this guy. So he brings Joseph in. They clean him up. They put a clean linen robe on him. They shave him. They make him look presentable before the king. And so he comes in and he interprets the dream for the king. Now, here's the problem the king has. His dream puts him in conflict with his gods because his dream involves seeing cows coming up out of the Nile. Cows and grain. Now, cows and grain are food. The Nile is a source of food. Now, the Nile, as I already told you, remember, the Nile is a god, the god of Egypt. This is the source of fertility. This is the father god of Egypt. the cows and the grain are under the control of a goddess named Isis. So this goddess named Isis is the earth goddess. And the earth goddess is the one who gives birth to the grain, and the cows eat the grain, and that's why you have fat cows. So you have a conflict of these two gods. So he has this dream, the cows and the grain coming up out of the Nile, and for some reason, Isis is not in control. There's going to be these skinny cows are going to eat up the fat cows, and they're not going to get any fatter. So the Pharaoh's a little upset by this. So Joseph comes up. Pharaoh tells him the dreams, and Joseph says, God will give you a complete answer, but it won't be because of me. If you think it's because of me, you're wrong. You had the dream, and I'm going to come and speak for God. I'm not God, but he's going to tell you what it means. And what he says is, you've had two dreams, and God is telling you twice the same thing. There's going to be 7 years of prosperity, and there's going to be 7 years of famine. And Joseph goes on to say that God has told you, Pharaoh, in 41:25 and in 41:28, he says, God has shown you, Pharaoh. Why does he do that twice? Well, when he says to him, God has told you, this is revealing ahead of time that which could not be known by human means. He revealed to you ahead of time something that could not be known by any other way other than through him. When he says he has shown you, that's the word see. See. He has shown you. He has made you a seer. God has made you a prophet, Pharaoh. And this is the word for prophecy. And if this is prophecy, God is saying that everything God has said to you is going to happen. Can't be stopped. Can't be changed. Can't be altered. Now, there's something even more that's underlying. When he's saying, Pharaoh, God is interpreting your dreams, there's another person who's considered to be God in this realm, on earth, God on earth, Pharaoh himself. The people considered Pharaoh to be divine, Pharaoh to be God. Pharaoh, you are not God. He doesn't say this directly, but by what he said about God interpreting his dream, he's certainly implying it. So what you find is Pharaoh listening, because Joseph says this matter has been firmly decided and God's going to do it. You, Pharaoh, have been used as a seer to be shown what's going to happen. And he said to Pharaoh, look for a wise man. You better find a wise man who can handle this. Put him in charge of Egypt. Well, Pharaoh has a consultation with all his wise men and everybody and comes to the conclusion that there's a spirit of God in this person. He's pretty wise. He was able to interpret his dreams. I think he's our man. And he says, I'm going to put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. And Joseph does not reject that idea and reject that position. Here's what this means. Pharaoh believed him. When he says, I'm going to put you in charge, it means, I believe you. I believe you and I believe in your God. And he took his advice. You have to wonder, is he submitting to Joseph's God by putting Joseph in charge? He said, we don't have enough information. I wish I could see his heart. I wish we had more information. And I wonder, you know, as I was reading through this and I saw his response and as I thought about it and as I tried to put myself in Joseph's place and think about this Pharaoh's reaction, who the people think is divine, humbling himself before this slave who's been sold into his kingdom, thinking, I wonder if we're going to see him again, if we're going to see him in glory, this Pharaoh. So the king puts a signet ring on Joseph's finger, a ring that has a seal where he can buy and sell on the authority of the Pharaoh. The sign is the credit card for the kingdom, yes. And then look at the next thing. He put robes of fine linen on him. He got a coat of authority again. He's an authority. So, wow. Isn't this amazing? Full circle.
He gets it back.
But from a different source.
This dry cleaners meant they could never...
No, they could never. Couldn't get the... Yeah, they took all the color out of it. See, it's just fine linen. Then they put the gold chain around his neck. Be a gold chain that would probably have the insignia of the Pharaoh on it. And then he gives him a chariot, and the chariot says, you are second in command. He's riding through in his chariot. The shouts of the people are going to be, kneel down, kneel down. One is coming who is second only to Pharaoh. We must honor him. Bow down, bow down. It gives you a little flavor of Gentile people are going to bow down to this Joseph. It's not just the brothers are going to bow down. It's Gentile people are going to bow down. And what I say about the dream in the far future, he's talking about when the sun, moon, and stars are bowing down to him. That's a reference to Jesus. All of creation is going to bow down to Jesus. And I'm totally convinced in my heart, I believe in my hearts and hearts, that Joseph is put here to be a model for the kind of person Jesus is from beginning to end. He had the character that Jesus wants us to display. So here he is. He's second in command to Pharaoh, and the people think Pharaoh is divine. Pharaoh is a god. So this guy is as close to God as they understand him as that you can get. He not only gave him the elements and the trappings and the externals of power, he gave him a name. I'm going to give you an Egyptian name. Makes him much more acceptable to the people. You are worthy to be an Egyptian. And the Egyptian nation and the Egyptian government and the Egyptian religion and culture was very good. So he names him Zaphnath-Paneah. And I don't like that as well as Joseph because it's too hard to say. I call him ZP. So Josephus said that it means God speaks and lives. He was given a wife. And now this wife is an important person because she's a daughter of a priest of On. Now this is not just any slack priest. This is a priest of On, which is the temple of the sun. So he's probably the high priest of the temple of the sun because he's going to give him a wife from the very highest echelons of society. So the daughter's name is Asenath, daughter of Potipharah. Notice his name is a lot like Potiphar's because they are a related name. But his name emphasizes, it means the same thing as Potiphar's name, but his name emphasizes the god Ra. And the god Ra is the sun god, and he's the high priest in the temple of the sun. Asenath means that she's devoted to Nat. That's a goddess of hunt and war. Hunting and war. And they're kind of interchangeable because they both involve slaughter and killing. So here you have this man, accused rapist, prisoner, now elevated to second in command. During the good years, during the years where everything is going well, and he's made second in command, and you know what's interesting? The first thing he does, he goes out and he imposes a 20% tax on everybody. Because remember, the plan was to take one-fifth of everything that everyone raises and store it away. And in the narrative, it says he stored so much away in those 7 years that the grain was like the sands of the sea. And so you could see people reacting, saying, why is he continuing to take this 20% tax? Why is he continuing to do this when we've got so much? There's so much in storage. But since he's in charge, nobody else can say anything about this. This has to be carried out. Now, what's unique about this is God's wisdom here. This is fantastic. During this time, he's having children. During these blessed years, he has a child named Manasseh. And what Manasseh means is God's made me forget my trouble and my father's house. Now, what did I say the word forget means?
Not to remember.
It's a conscious decision. But here, in this case, he says, God has caused me to forget, to not to care, to, in a sense, write off my past and live now because this is where God has me and is blessing me. I am never going back to Canaan again. I am never going back to my father's household again. I don't ever expect to see them again. And that's okay. I consciously agree with God that he's made me forget all of that past because now is where he's blessed me. And because of that, his next son he names Ephraim. Ephrat means fruit. And when he says Ephraim, that means double fruit. So he's blessed me doubly in the land of my suffering, which has now become the land of my prosperity and blessing. The 7 years go by, fantastic wealth. They're storing all this grain, and then it starts. The famine starts. Nobody has anything. And this is a famine that he said is going to ruin your country if you don't do something about it. Well, Joseph is prepared. So now, instead of taking in the 20% tax, it's going to all get redistributed back out. It's going to all go back out because he's got to feed all the people who now are not raising any grain. It's not a famine just in Egypt, but it's in all the countries of the world. And all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe, not just in Egypt, but in all the world. So Joseph now has enough stockpiled where he can sell to other nations And so now all that was taken in during those prosperous years, when that 20% tax was going on, it's all going now. It's all going to be redistributed back out because people need it. This is the wisdom of God. This is amazing to me. This blows my mind because Egypt didn't operate like this before. And Gentile nations don't operate like this. Gentile rulers, it says Jesus has lorded over their people. They don't do this. Now, what's interesting to me, when Moses starts writing the Torah, saying, here's how you're going to manage the land, you're going to take in a 23% tithe every year. And when people are in need, you're going to put it back out to them. Now, we think the tithe is 10%. Well, that's only part of what they tithe in the nation. They tithe 23% totally out of all they took in order to provide not only for the priesthood and for the temple, but for the nation and the poor in the nation. God is so wise. It's amazing. Because what happens in Gentile countries is what happens to most of the wealth. It goes to the very most powerful men, and then they control the wealth. Does it ever go back out to the people who need it? No. Now, did the nation of Israel do what God told them to do in managing their nation? No. Isaiah the prophet came along and said, the rich men in your nation, they're perverting justice. They're not taking care of the widows and the orphans. They're hoarding the wealth for themselves. It's not going back out. See how God is providing for His people in all this too, in the background. God is really providing for Jacob, because Jacob is the one who's going to come down. When they come down, in the next chapters, 42 and 43, Joseph's going to meet his brothers. And people are coming to buy grain, and guess who gets to come to buy grain? Jacob's sons. So now what I want you to do when you read through this, and read through this, this is so good. I mean, they could write movie scripts. They could make plays. Oh, wait, they do make plays out of this. Notice how Joseph treats his brothers. I think that's an important thing to look for. Why does he treat them the way he does? That's the question that you want to ask. Why is he treating them the way he's treating them? I think we're out of time, so let's close up. And Bill, could you do the honor of praying for us to close?
You bet.
Thanks.
Father, what an amazing story. Thank you.